Click on that. So it is an examination project related to the last thing that we had in the lecture. That is the question of the long-term instabilities. And it's too much work to be finished today. But I would encourage that you use that as an exercise, and I will post the solution. But what I would like you to do is the first part of the project, all this is what we lecture about. In the first part of the project, okay, I don't find it now, but I will tell you very briefly what the first part of the project is. The first part of the project is the following. You should consider this model, slide 14. And with VenSim, just to create the diagram, or perhaps a causal loop diagram of it. So it should look like, let me show you. So, without entering equations and so on, so you could just create a causal loop diagram. It should look like this with VenSim. Or you could create something like this with the stocks and the flows without entering the equations. So, I would like you to spend about 15 minutes or so to see if you can grasp the problem. So again, this model is created with SMIA, and I would like you to try to sketch that with VenSim without entering equations. So spend 15 minutes looking at it and see it, if you can begin making that model with VenSim. It's okay? So I go for a cup of coffee, and I will be back in 5 minutes. In the meantime, you get started, Saina.
in.
Are you making progress? I will have a look. Let me have a look.
Yeah, the first loop. So
yes.
The only loop I've done, I just made the variables for the loops.
Okay, but that's okay. You don't need to spend more time on that now, because I see that you have grasped the principles. So we can do that. What happened here? Input here. So Steiner, thank you very much for this. I suppose the students who are following with this in long distance, they are doing well. I would like to now review the project. I have prepared some slides for the first examination project, and I haven't finished. I cannot post them to the website yet, but I'm going to show you the most important things. So this is the first project. And here I have the wrong thing. This should be okay, like this. So, part one. The main finding was that most students could develop an archetype that matched the project description. Very few students, I think one or two, perhaps two only, they borrowed archetyped examples from the previous course, but they didn't match the project so well, even if they were related to information security. What I see is that the main cause when the students do not perform so well is that they overlook things. They simply don't read the project description well enough. And that's my clear recommendation, repeated many times. I can say it once more. It's a very, very, very good investment in doing a very thorough and very good reading of professional documentation, which is different from reading a newspaper or reading a novel or so. First, it's important that you get an overview of what it is all about, so you do a first pass. Then you should do several passes, and in the next passes you have to look specific for information that you need. That's what I mean to parse the document for cues that are relevant for your problem. Making notes, analyzing the thing, trying to put in the things together. And this should be done until you feel that you know the challenge well enough and that you have all the notes that you need to start building on that. And as a check or quality assurance check, if you have read the problem description well, then you should have a list of key terms that you can use. If you are going to model, for instance, they could be the variables of the problem. Okay, now solutions. Most of you got it right. So there is a balancing loop, which is the learning from incidents. Incidents occur here. They are investigated through a process of incidents investigation. And there is some learning from that, so that the amount of incidents next time decreases in relation to the proportion. So there are attacks, there are events, but the proportion of events turning into incidents decreases. That's the intended consequence loop. The unintended one is that by spending time on investigation, the staff workload increases, which over time will lead to overworked investigators, so that the quality of the investigation decreases. Because the quality of the investigation decreases, with some time delay, the learning decreases as well, which means that the incidence, the proportion of incidence increases, and then you are getting a reinforcing feedback loop, like this and like this, overworked investigators. Solutions, I put two versions, I've seen both in case of the students. One is to allocate more resources and tools to improve the quality of investigation. If the quality of the investigation improves, then indirectly the staff workload will decrease, because by better quality you will have more success, and then the staff workload will decrease. Or you could give simply more staff. So the manager could say, okay, I make your task easier by adding staff to the analyzing of this. Both are possible solutions. There can be many other solutions. The point is how to alleviate the workload of the staff, either by better tools, better training, by more staff, or whatever. Which is the best solution will depend on circumstances, it will depend on the organization, and so many other things. Archetypes are simplified versions, and they suppress a lot of information. The art is more complex, there may be even more effects to be considered, but this is, so to speak, the problem in a nutshell. Any questions? Okay, so that most of the students got this completely right, and I think all the students have some idea about archetypes, and didn't make big errors. Yes? I don't understand quite what your question is, Steiner. Can you show me there?
This one, I was understanding that this had to be like the problem in need of control, so it was like...
Yes. Yes, the problem in need of control...
I thought that would be the incidents, like...
Okay, yes. Okay, I see your point. Well, this is not so important. The important thing is that... So the problem in needy control is the incidents, yes. But whether you put it there or you put it there, it's not so important. The important thing is that it is part of the balancing loop. So what is the action is the incidents investigation. And the problem in control is the incidents. The way this is dealt with is the investigation increases the database and the insights and diminishes this. But then this intended consequence loop has an unintended consequence loop that the quality of the investigation decreases, and therefore the learning, and therefore this counteracts the incidences. Other findings. Still, some students can make mistakes with the polarities. So it's very important to do this well, so that you don't get confused. Positive polarity means effect, cause and effect move in the same direction. If one increases, the other increases. If one decreases, the other decreases. And negative polarity is the opposite. If the cause increases, the effect decreases. And if the cause decreases, the effect increases. Sometimes the feedback loop gets the wrong type. Instead of reinforcing, it's called balancing, the other way around. And this happens sometimes because the polarities of the arrows are wrong, but sometimes polarities are right, but the feedback loop is given the wrong polarity. So again, you have to be very careful and be very accurate. So spend time, be critical. Then one or two students propose the wrong archetype. It should be an out-of-control archetype, because the intended consequences is to mitigate, to control, so to speak, the problem, which is to mitigate the proportion of the events that result in incidents. Then it is recommended that you communicate the feedback loop with a catchy name. Some students forgot or used names that were too complex. Then it's important to argue for the assumptions that you are using, so not just drawing something, but give an argument for that, and also explain how the archetype works by a dynamic story. Then an issue that created problems for most students was the question why every feedback loop must contain a stock. And this I had emphasized in one lecture, but very few students seem to grasp or remember that. So if you have a feedback loop like here, where A influences B, B, C, and C influences A. Just to make it simple, with three variables, you could have four, you could have five, you could have perhaps only two. Now, suppose none of these variables are stocks. Then you have to reflect that it means they are given the property of some variable at some given time t. And that's impossible, because it says A is given by C at time t, C is given by B at time t, B is given by A at time t. So you cannot define things this way. It gets undefined if you are relying on something else to define. So this is a so-called circular definition. A circular definition is actually no explanation, no definition, because it leaves things unexplained. So you must have a stock. Why? Because if you have a stock, let's suppose it is A, then A is not given at time t the same time as C. It's given at a time t plus a time step. And because of this, every time you turn around the feedback loop, you are going farther in time. So you start with B at time t, suppose you get C in as function of B in time t, but then A is at time t plus time step. Then B becomes, depending on that, but the next term is A at two time steps. So all the time you are moving in time, you don't get a circular definition. You are not going back to the same A. You are going to a new A. So this is actually which allows a consistent definition. What many students say is without the stock, you wouldn't get time behavior, and that's correct, but that's not the whole explanation. The explanation where you get you must have a stock is to avoid the circular definition, so that you can actually do real computations. So in part two, first of all, I know that it is not so easy to become a good modeler in the short duration of this course. So I am not too strict in demanding that everything should be correct. Rather, what I look for is, does the student advance, make things that you can build upon? And the more the answer, the project goes in this direction, the better it is. As to mistakes, we have to correct them and learn from that. But there seems to be some confusion. For instance, many students wrote the diagram that you see here. So they had incidents, and they put incident rate here. But this is not allowed, other than to define the initial value of the stock. But here it was meant as a change of the stock all the time. Rather, what you have to do, this is not correct, but what is correct is incident rate as a flow increasing the number of incidents recorded. Still, the students that make this, they manipulated the equation of the stock so that it seemed to be correct, but graphically it should be shown as a flow. And you must remember that the only way to change stocks is through the flows. When you get such a pointer, this is only allowed to give the value of the stock at time zero. Okay? Other errors that I detected were wrong units, especially forgetting that there is a relation between the units of the flow and the units of the stock. If you have a unit for the stock, all the flows that enter or go out from the stock must have the same unit as the stock divided by the time unit. So if it is weeks, it's weeks. If it's hours, it's hours, or whatever, but it's always like this. Some models did not define the units. This is makes more difficult for you, because by defining the units, you have a possibility of checking for consistency. And we have always checked to check and check to eliminate inconsistencies and errors. Then there were some equations that were not so reasonable. You have to be critical as to the equations that you propose, especially when you use also numerical functions, tables, lookups. So some equations could be wrong, or at least not justified, or not documented. Most of the models didn't have documentation. Now, if you look at the model that system dynamic model that implements the first loop, learning from incidents, the intended consequence. Then the idea is here, as you can see here, you have the incident rate. Incidents occur, and they are recorded as incidents. So first the attack, some of these attacks result in incidents. You have an incident rate that increases the number of incidents. These incidents that are here will be investigated, and as they are investigated, they leave the stock and enter the stock of done. And then we assume that there was an average time to investigate these incidents. Here you see an initialization with a gray arrow. That means that the number of incidents investigated is given by this. I said it's, you should assume it was one. And then we had the reduction effect from incidents investigated, where I gave you a function that comes from psychology, how learning occurs through a learning coefficient. And because of this learning, then more incidents could be prevented, and that gave the balancing feedback loop. Okay, then I give you here the equations. I will put you the VMSIM models will also come in. I will upload into Fronta, so you can see that here. This is not. The first model is not doesn't have any strange equations. They are kind of equations that you have seen before. The only thing was this learning function, but I gave you a hint as to how to create that using the power. This is the power, and using the logarithm. The time step, perhaps this is too small. This time step here, I don't know why I chose a small one. Visual accuracy is enough. Then when you simulate, then you can compare first the incidence rate. This is the incident rate. It decreases rapidly because of the learning. And this is the incident investigate rate. To begin with, one has more and more and more incidents. Then, because you get the stream coming to investigate it. Over time, as the learning effect becomes marked, more pronounced, then you get a decline over time. Here you see the number of incidents in the stock. It increases for a while until it starts decreasing. First it increases from the incident rate, then it reaches a maximum because you are getting incidents investigated, leaving out, while the number of incidents occurring is decreasing because of the learning effect. So I put here the comments. Incident rate here decreases quickly owing to the learning effect. The incident investigate rate reaches a maximum and goes asymptotically towards the incident rate. I see I have to do some reading here. And goes asymptotically. Below the incidence increases first until the decreasing rate of incidents and the incident investigation result in a maximum, and thereafter kind of a plateau stabilizes. Whereas the cumulative number of incidents investigated must increase all the time because you are getting more and more incidents that are done. They are harmless because they have been investigated. It's simply reports and so on. To begin with, quick increase, and then it becomes slower and slower, but continues increasing because you are getting new incidents over time. When you put now, considering this model, you could have modeled this in different ways because we don't have so precise information as to how to do that. So we need to make some reasonable assumptions. And if you make some other assumption, you can get some other model, but it shouldn't be too different. But the point is, keep it as simple as possible and make assumptions that you can defend and that they seem reasonable. Now, as to extending the model to have an unintended consequence. The crucial idea is to compare the incident investigation rate with the incident investigation capacity. And some people computed the gap. The gap is not the best way of measuring this. It is rather the quotient, the ratio between the incident investigation rate and the capacity. If the ratio is smaller or equal than one, that means the quality of the investigation is high. But once you surpass the capacity, then you have to spend less time on the incidents and the quality of the investigation becomes worse and worse. Then we have to model that. And in order to model that, you can use a table function, and here you see how to do that. The input is this ratio, the ratio between the investigation rate and the capacity. As long as you are up to one, you are have full effect. When you are getting a higher investigation rate than you have capacity for, the quality decreases, first slower, then it plumps down. In the end, if you have a huge number of incidents in relation to the capacity, then the quality is very poor. We have seen a similar curve in the slides that I'll show you from the PhD thesis of Johannes. Let me see if I can find it again. Here. The bottom curve is the quality of investigation. And you see how similar it is that as the assumption that I made here. So this one. Okay. Okay? And the input here is the investigation rate divided by the capacity to investigate.